Hey, it's good to see you. Ken Mulligan, associate professor, SIU Political Science. How are you this morning,
Good
Ken?
Morning, Tom. I'm great.
Last night's debate. You know, it's interesting because you had two different kinds of people up there. And very different in idea and thought and age and race and all these differences between Democrats and Republicans. What's a more profound difference these days? But, you know, it's interesting. I think I've always seen Donald Trump as a stream of consciousness speaker. And
yes.
I think that was on display last night with Harris.
Yes, it was. And even according to his own campaign, he does not prepare in advance for these debates very much. And so he says what's on his mind. And that's true. Anybody who's paid any attention to Trump can see that either while he's out on the campaign trail or in a debate.
And with Harris, it was a much more structured response. And you could tell much more practiced as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I was memorized. She would go into a script and just say what she had memorized, regardless of what the question was. But, I mean, they're different approaches.
And, of course, the other third element on stage last night was the moderators.
Yes, and people are going to have different points of view on this. I've been struck by how the moderators how they interjected themselves in the debate. They were criticized in the previous debate. Of course, it was different moderators that time around. But Republicans, this is the one attitude I'll express. The Republicans have had some misgivings about even doing these debates because they don't trust the moderators. And I think last night that was the reason why. They're not even-handed in terms of who they're fact-checking.
And that frequency, I think, is one of the issues. It really is. And a lot of people talk about, well, we need another debate. And, of course, the argument about the rules. I think Vice President Harris' absence of an audience, you could tell she was waiting for some kind of response and just not used to there being no one in the room.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea that there's no audience there. The audience gets in the way. The moderators get in the way. The idea of a presidential debate should be to allow the candidates to speak in a way that voters can see where they stand and to have a comparative perspective of the candidates. By the way, last night, both candidates, in my view, said zingers, things that were legitimately factually incorrect. And without going into the weeds on how and why, the moderators, when they start interjecting, they're putting themselves into the debate in ways that are, in my view, unnecessary, especially when they're not being even-handed in their moderating.
All right. Now, last night, one of the biggest issues was the dearth of information from Harris since she took over in the interviews and things along that line, one-on-one press conferences. So I think when it came to last night, a lot of people wanted to hear, okay, did you change your stance on the wall? Did you change your stance on economy? Did you change your stance on a long list of items and seeing that? And, you know, and she stuck with her previous plan was, well, my values haven't changed.
Yeah, so she was asked about that, and she essentially did not respond on specifics for most of those issues. I mean, she accused Trump of, quote, not having a plan, but neither did she articulate a plan. So I guess that's kind of where we are right now.
And the only plan that I did hear was more specifics, was, of course, saying Trump had the worst economy. If you were going to fact check someone, that would probably have been a good place to jump in. If you were going to fact check her on an issue, Kamala probably should have gotten the ABC fact check at that point.
There were multiple instances like that, in my view. But my view is also that that's not the role of a moderator. They should not be interjecting themselves constantly in a debate.
Having hosted quite a few of them in this very studio, I'm saying it was very simple rules. You don't talk to each other. You talk to me. You answer the question for me, and then you will get time. And I'm a tyrant.
Well, that's another thing. Going into the debate, the talking heads were talking about how Trump was going to be, as he has in the past, bombastic and interrupting and all the rest. And this morning, the media portraying her as being the one who is doing the interrupting and attacking, although they're not doing it in a critical way. In that respect, I mean, I thought it was a respectful debate. The candidates went back and forth. The moderators, to say something nice about them, did give them a chance to respond to each other. And as they, I think, should.
And bent the rules to do it.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is interesting, because when you look at that conversation last night, there are two different styles of people, and it's a debate. It's supposed to be inherently adversarial.
Yes.
It's the nature of it. And right. you've been to debate class in clubs and watched them too. That's the nature of it.
Well, and it's this is the way that candidates present themselves to voters, and voters need to have an opportunity to see how the candidates react and to see how they respond to the criticisms from the other side.
All right. You know, and it's interesting because our listeners have been texting about it all morning. I mean, did she wear an earpiece? I mean, you hear all kinds of different things that people are already theorizing this morning. Just looking to see if I can find a couple of questions. Here's one. Could you ask Professor Mulligan about the elephant in the room no one is talking about? Trump gets sentenced next week. What effect will it have if he's in Rikers Island?
That seems unlikely to happen. I don't know where that stands specifically, but I don't think he's going to be doing jail time anytime soon. And the short answer to that question is I don't think it's going to matter much. I mean, these cases against Trump, rightly or wrongly, are viewed as being among Trump voters political. Trump said that they were political last night. He blamed Harris for
weaponization.
Weaponization, right? Yeah. So I think that those are at this point, and frankly have been for a while, a bit of a wash. Which is to say, they're not going to affect. There are plenty of things that have happened and could still happen that could affect the outcome of this election. But those in the past, probably not.
You know, the one thing, and I was talking about it yesterday morning, that I wanted to hear a question about. I wanted to hear a question about the national debt. And, you know, there were just things that I want to hear about. And, and I was talking with Congressman Mike Boss this time yesterday morning. I'm like, if there's going to be a question for the debate, the bottom line for this country is how well are we doing? Well, we're $35.4 trillion in debt. And we're paying $3 billion a day in interest, coming up to the tune of $1.004 trillion a year in interest. And the entire military budget is $850 billion. To give it perspective, I mean, there are things that I want to hear talked about last night, but the thing that showed up, the blame game, right? Part of and Afghanistan and Ukraine and Russia, where I think the blame game got it the strongest words, I think, last night.
Yes, and those are interesting cases, and I don't remember I'm not sure I understand what you mean by the blame game.
Putin would have never invaded Ukraine had I been president.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that I can have the war ended the minute I'm president-elect, or we'll have it done before I'm sworn in.
Trump is generally viewed as more favorable on foreign policy among voters. So, you know, I think there's that. And that's a clear policy difference, too, right, between the two sides. And Israel as well. But Trump takes the position that these would not be problems if I were president. I mean, who's to say whether or not that's true?
Well, and when it came to the Israel question last night, Kamala Harris and her walking that tightrope last night between Israel and Hamas, thousands of children dying, and it was a horrible thing on October 7th. She was trying to walk. That was a high wire act.
That is a difficult situation for her because so many Democrats are pro-Palestinian, let's say, on this particular topic. And in general, that shouldn't matter much in the presidential election in terms of voting because there aren't enough people out there for it to really make a difference. And they're going to vote for Harris anyway. But in a place like especially Michigan, where there is a very large Arab population, if they were to stay home and not turn out to vote, that could be an issue.
And the last time you and I spoke, I cut out the slice so I could share it with our listeners again the next morning, saying it's really about turnout.
Oh, it really is. And if we were to get into the weeds about where this election stands right now, it really is about as close as it could be to being a tie. There was a New York Times poll a couple of days ago that has Trump a little bit ahead. Most of the other polls nationally have Harris up by a point or two. If we were to go state by state in terms of the swing states, it's also very, very close, including in what is the primary swing state, the most important one, the state that will probably, the candidate who wins it will probably win the election, and that's Pennsylvania. As of yesterday, I think Harris was up by less than 0.5%, which means that it's a tie. And so, yes, turnout will be absolutely critical.
American Monument text line, really more of a statement. There's no question mark in a single one here. Says, I have no idea who won the debate, but most assuredly, the USA lost. These TV shows masquerading as debates offer a lot of heat, but little light. We all are a few IQ points diminished because of this foolish exercise of pox on both houses. Now, that's an interesting insight, I think, to me, is there's a group of people in them going, y'all aren't meeting my expectations.
Yeah, I think that strikes me as fair. And neither of these candidates are viewed among quite a few voters on both sides as a first choice type of candidate.
And here's Ruby from Murfreesboro saying, Kamala was too flippant and cutesy. The issues are no laughing matter. Now, it's interesting because if you extrapolate from Ruby's statement, some would call it passion and some would call it anger on the part of Trump.
It's a matter of perspective. It really is. On average, there was one poll out this morning about the debate last night, and it has a relatively small sample, so there is a large sampling error. However, whereas it is true that most Republicans thought that Trump won the debate, most Democrats thought that Harris won the debate, and that's always true, Harris was perceived as being better overall and among more Democrats. So at least according to the data, which I have looked at this morning, it was a CNN poll, Harris won the debate last night.
And, you know, at the same time, you've got literally Fox publishing a story this morning, an opinion page by Doug Schoen, just showed up saying it's pretty clear that Vice President Kamala Harris won. The reason why, the vice president had some help, aided and abetted by ABC. This is Fox opinion page.
Yeah.
I kind of thought last night would be maybe the definitive act, and the reason why is because of the lack of direct statements from the vice president to the press and in interviews.
I agree with you, and at least according to the data that are out this morning, the debate last night probably helped her a little bit, certainly among Democrats. Democrats have been enthusiastic that she's replaced Biden. And that's one of the things that could really affect turnout. If people who would have stayed home, if Biden were the candidate, but will come out because they like Harris, that could make the difference. It really could.
Yeah, I can see that. Many of you said it because they were just like, well, I'll just set this one out.
Yes. Yeah, precisely. So you look at the enthusiasm gap. I mean, at first I thought it was a little overblown, but if you look at the polls with respect to enthusiasm about the candidates, Democrats really are excited about Harris.
The convention was a big show.
Well, but the thing is, there was no convention bump
for either candidate.
Yeah, so, you know, we have to look at these things after the fact. We don't know the way things are going to go. Let me say one last thing, and then I'm going to have to hustle off to go to class,
right,
which is that now is the time when these models come out about who's going to win, and they're based on the polls, but also about assumptions of turnout. And without getting, because we don't have time to talk about it, Nate Silver's model, which is the one that I have always put the most credit to, if that's the right way of saying it, he has Trump winning the election, 64% probability.
But it's also where you win.
Well, yes, but he looks at that too. However, there are other models, including the 538 model that Silver used to be in charge of. They have Harris with a 55% probability. The YouGov model, which just came out yesterday, I think, maybe this morning, has it 50% Harris, 47% Trump, with the rest undecided. So it's really close, you know, those differences come down to assumptions about turnout. And that's what's really going to be key and what we don't know.
Yeah, and I know a lot of L-line voters would like to have their voices heard and feel they're overwhelmed in this state, you know, and a lot of questions about that. Ken, I know I've got to let you go. I'm sorry I kept you slow along. Associate Professor Ken Mulligan, SIU Political Science. Already looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Same here. Thanks, Tom.